This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's the...
billiard room.
Come on already. We call it the...
The Place to Be.
Yes, the Place to Be. The Place to Be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Time to play the game!
No, you left me satisfied and smiling.
That's what she said!
So why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Japanese band Oral Vampire produced a song called The Repo Man and used footage.
Oral Vampire, huh?
Or Aural. A-U-R-A-L. What kind of show is this?
Sounds like some Twilight porn in Michael Lynch's collection there.
Oz went on to star in American Pie, of course, is the lacrosse player. Bismarck. No, was it? Bismarck, wasn't it?
Bismarck.
No, who's the other guy I'm getting confused with?
Bismarck. Yeah, he dressed as North Dakota.
There's only one place where the big boys play, and that is in my extra queen-size bed. Well, it just happens. What can you do?
Let's talk the fix.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
Is that the shock master's wall?
Yeah, I like big dick myself. I was just curious. PTB Nation, let me know what
you're
our
opening.
To do worse than Josh Richards. And girls with condo, Chanel with Gatano. Girl, my persona, I share like Sonny Bono. Black and white keys, lay girls on my piano. Me, Missy, and Timbo, rap at any tempo. Huckleberry, Fan, Magoo, the South Pimple. Caught up in my lingo, B9, girl, a bingo. Help, I see a beetle, cool out, that's only Ringo. Missy, sang a jangle as I commence the...
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to the great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I'm your co-host Justin Rosero, coming at you live here on this Monday evening on the eve of Place to Be Nation's trip to Money in the Bank this weekend in Boston. We are here with another Vintage Vault review, and of course, let me do that. Let me first bring in my PIC. This is Scott Criscola. Scott, how you doing?
Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode 319 of the Place to Be podcast, and we are on the eve of our fifth pay-per-view of 2014 in which at least one Place to Be Nation member is going to. I think Payback was the only one nobody went that nobody went to. So, pretty impressive.
Someone was there.
I asked a lot of people, and I mean, that was what, Chicago? I mean, who are the people who live close? Steve Willey? I know he didn't go. Yeah. Who else lives in that neck of the woods? Joel Barnhart didn't go. Duncan, he didn't go. I'm trying to think of guys that live in the Midwest. I can't think of anybody that I talked to that went to Payback, but... I don't know where the rest of the Battlegrounds in Tampa. Obviously, SummerSlam's in L.A. We don't know, maybe Grant Owens or...
I think I think Claire might be going.
So. And Claire, that's true, Claire, or even Todd Weber, one of those guys. I don't even know where the... I know one's in Houston.
Okay, it doesn't matter.
Something like that.
You
but anyway.
Spend your main event time discussing this.
But yes. But anyway, yeah. So we'll be in Beantown on Sunday for Money in the Bank, and we'll talk more about Money in the Bank on Wednesday. Or
I'm hoping someone randomly comes up to us in the parking lot, introduces themselves, and then asks us to start a website a couple weeks later. That'd be fun.
It didn't happen in Pittsburgh.
It happened at Mania last year.
That's true. It didn't happen at Extreme Rules, although. That would be very funny. That would be very funny. Anyway, JR, pleasure as always. Did you have a pleasant weekend? I saw that you scooped up some more shandy.
Yes, scooped up a lot of shandy. We got lucky. Charlie was here. We happened to wander into Joyal's Liquors down in West Warwick, and we were shocked to see in the cooler a case and a half of Dells, and then there was none by the time we left. So we pilfered it for ourselves, and I had some, too, on tap. We went to Bonehead's Friday nights, stopped back in on Sunday, joined the Mug Club officially.
Ah, it took you long enough. I guess they got a slot open, huh?
Yeah. Well, they opened up the first 50 for renewal. So if people didn't renew by a certain date, they became available. And they're doing the back 50 in July. So I was very very excited to grab number 21, and that mug shall remain mine until either I or them expire. So we'll see. I'm very excited.
Let's hope neither happen, okay?
I need to get a nice PTBN sticker for that thing. And then I was joking that because it's number 21, I'm going to get a Paul O'Neill jersey sticker.
Yeah, say Paul O'Neill's head. And the 21s.
Smashing a glass or something angry.
Yes. They should be now because they're getting hammered right now by the...
I didn't even put it on. I opted for the world-class documentary here on the live stream.
Oh, nice. Weekend was good otherwise?
Yeah, not bad. You?
Pretty good. A little church action yesterday. I think by 2014, we may have a podcast. Who does more church stuff, Jordan Duncan or me? So it seems to be adding up various events and things. But no, it was a very nice weekend. Looking forward to this weekend as we head into Boston on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And again, as I mentioned, you'll hear more about Money in the Bank later this week. I'm sure you'll chat about it with K-Squared on the Kevin Kelly Show briefly.
Yeah, we got a lot to talk about with that.
Yep, and then, of course, the Core 4 will make their picks on this week's edition of Main Event as well. So, but tonight, JR, we're going to delve back 12 years.
Hey, what is going on here?
You know, it was always a joke that I didn't think you actually lived here, but I guess you do, because school's out. Although Zach Morris probably went to high school, to summer school more than once. Anyway, tonight, Inside the Vintage Vault, on episode 319 of the Place to Be podcast, we've got match of the year and storyline stinker of all time.
Let the truth be told. Kane is a murderer.
Kane, you are a murderer.
Denial fuels the anger.
I am not.
Kane,
it was an accident.
Murderer.
Why don't you tell the world the whole truth? You are a murderer.
Guilt poisons the soul.
It's something that I have to live.
It was
with.
An accident.
Something that I've thought
Kane,
about every day.
You
killed Kane.
That was disturbing on many levels. I mean, a hell of a video package.
Yes.
Great to pump up a couple of very questionable storylines as we'll delve into, but really well done. The jump cuts at the end with the bells and the prayers and the baby and Paul Heyman being Paul Heyman was very, very good. Very, very
Yes, it was. But we'll talk about these two storylines. One that is well known to be disturbing and one that I don't think many people talk about. But after watching today, also equally disturbing. Tonight, Inside the Vintage Vault, we bring you No Mercy 2002.
No Mercy.
Which will come down, JR, as probably maybe one of the best pay-per-views of all time. I mean, there's
it may
at least...
be, well, one thing we'll track as we go. Is it the best paper, one of the best pay-per-views of all time that has weird storyline or bad
storylines?
Yeah,
incredibly bizarre storylines, but when it came to being executed in the ring...
Yeah.
Most of the show is really damn good. Most of it. There's some stinkers. There's a couple stinkers, but we've been talking about heavily about the roster and just the tone of the company. Have we now finally gotten some stability? I know I ask you this every month, but have now finally we've gotten some stability, or are we still kind of in limbo?
No, I think we're stable now. I think it happened as soon as they created that other title for Triple H heading into Unforgiven.
Mm.
Even though it's questionable. I think that's since then we've been pretty stable now. Yeah. I think
and another
settled into the two shows. The booking teams are pretty set, and I feel like now we're kind of in a good place.
Yeah, and as we talk about in a little bit, another title is created this evening. So to kind of strengthen one of the brands, and I tell you, one brand came out looking real strong after this show,
mm-hmm.
more than the other, in my opinion. October 20th, 2002, live from the Alltel Arena in Little Rock, Arkansas.
Very odd.
We are debuting a new state, JR, for
yes.
who knows the last time. When did we last? And this happens more than once in 2003, believe it or not.
Hmm.
I know off the top of my head, two states make their debut, pay-per-view debut in 2003. One of them had a huge show, believe it or not. Actually, both big shows are debuts. But yeah, never been in Bill Clinton's home turf before. Give us a little history then, because we obviously need it. Not of the state, but of the this new this arena, or how new is it?
Technically, in North Little Rock, had broken ground on August 22nd, 1997, opened October 2nd, 1999, owned by the Pulaski County Multipurpose Civic Center Facilities Board. General contractors, Turner and Voss Deninas. Capacity, 18,000 for basketball, 17,000 for hockey, 16,000 for arena football. We got four teams have played there. None current, though.
Oh.
The Arkansas Diamonds of the IFL played there for 10 years. The Arkansas Rimrockers of the D-League played there for three. The UALR, University of Arkansas Little Rock Trojans, played there for six mm-hmm. years. And the Arkansas Riverblades played there for 4 years as well of the ECHL. So no one there now.
The building's only 12 years old.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
oh, wait,
no,
no.
Pro 16. Teams.
15.
It seems like they still have concerts and stuff, but.
Yeah, and I'm sure, say, you know, University of Arkansas Razorbacks maybe play like non-conference games there. That's bigger than their building in Fayetteville. You know, maybe they colleges use it or something. I don't know if they've come back here. I doubt it.
Well, they do not for pay-per-view, but they do for Raw and SmackDown.
Yeah. Your attendance, 9,074. Oof. That's not good. That must be a lot of paper. I shouldn't say paper, but a lot of tarping of sections. If it's 17,000 for basketball, I don't know. Does the entrance block that many 8,000 seats? No, I doubt it. Your buy rate, 0.58, which isn't stellar. And your announcers, of course, for Raw, good old JR Jim Ross, Jared the King Lawler, and for SmackDown, Michael Cole and Taz, who are, I mean, boy, have they settled in. And
yes.
and they are awesome on this show, and we'll obviously document it. And they do a pretty good job, actually. They finally got into a symmetry with the formatting for this pay-per-view, because they actually just go back and forth, Raw, SmackDown, Raw, SmackDown, Raw, SmackDown. So they go into like perfect symmetry in terms of the announcers for this show. Do we have any heat matches, JR?
We do, but let's first get to our roll call.
Oh, yes, of course. My apologies.
Sutton's notes.
Mr. Sutton's roll
notes.
Call.
Yep.
Yes.
World champion Triple H, WWE champion Brock Lesnar, Intercontinental champion Kane had defeated Chris Jericho on September 30th, 02 Raw. Tag champions Chris Jericho and Christian had defeated Kane and the Hurricane on the 10-14 02 Raw. Kane and Hurricane had defeated the Un-Americans on September 23rd. So a couple of changes.
Wow.
Americans no longer have the gold and kind of no longer really
around
together as an effective group. So
yeah, weird.
Tag team championship is vacant. That'll be the new titles filled tonight. Mm-hmm. Cruiserweight champion Jamie Noble, women's champion Trish Stratus, still in place. Let's see mm-hmm. here what we got for Heat. We have Heat International saw Test defeating an unknown competitor. D'Lo Brown and Mark Jindrak defeated Raven and Stevie Richards, and William Regal defeated Spike Dudley. And on Real Heat, Hurricane defeated Stevie Richards. We have transfer. Was a transfer center here?
I don't think there were many. I think it started to settle down a little bit, right?
Yeah, I thought I saw one. Randy Orton moved from SmackDown to Raw, and the Hurricane Ooh. Went to Raw as well from SmackDown. A couple TV milestones.
Mm-hmm.
Raw passed 490 episodes. Velocity passed 20. And Tough Enough Season 3 has started now at this point.
Randy who?
Yeah,
never heard of him.
Guy from,
never heard of him
somewhere.
Before. Is that Barry O's nephew or something? I don't know, whatever.
So we got
I'm sure we'll talk about it somewhere.
Yeah, we got plenty of other fun facts here from Steven that we'll get to as we move
on. Okay. All right, let's dive in. And like as we mentioned, announcers now are set in, and this show they alternate. So we'll open with a Raw match, and it is for the aforementioned World Tag Team Championships, because now we separate as we have a second tag titles, and we'll get to them later on. And boy, is he scorching hot. He can come after anybody he wants. Booker T and his happy-go-lucky tag team partner. Still cruising along, my friend.
Mm-hmm.
Looking good in the ring.
Who would have thought this when he came back at the Rumble and had that weird little feud with RVD and No Way Out that they'd be one of the hottest tag teams with Booker T in the fall? But
two of the like most overpopped baby faces on the Raw roster. Yeah, it's very funny. Are. Taking on, as we mentioned, your new World Tag Team Champions, Chris Jericho, and former Un-American Christian. Boy, they just kind of like fell off the face of the earth, huh?
Mm-hmm.
A strange thing to happen to them, huh? I mean, they were. Was that a gimmick that was destined to have a short shelf life, you think? Or are they like, all right, we've had enough of
this? Yeah, but that was really short. I mean, they had just come together, like, in July.
Yeah.
So it was only really a few months. Very surprising.
And they just added a fourth guy. They just added Regal.
Yeah, very surprising. I feel bad for Lance Storm kind of gets screwed in the mix here, because Christian obviously does okay, because he jumps over and is now champions with Chris Jericho. Mm. So he does okay. But Storm kind of left in the dust to rot over on SmackDown now. So the world titles had changed twice.
Mm-hmm.
The night after Unforgiven, Kay and the Hurricane, as we mentioned, stunned Christian and Lance Storm. And then Christian picked a new partner, Chris Jericho, and they defeated Kane and Hurricane on 10-14 in Montreal to win the straps. On 10-7, Eric Bischoff had a special episode of Raw entitled Raw Roulette. The old spin the wheel, make the deal gimmick, Scott.
Very nice.
Random stipulations were thrown on the matches throughout the night. Booker T defeated Big Show in a cage match, but Chris Jericho attacked him right after to add a little bit of heat. Headed in here. So there is the setup for this one, Scott. And I enjoyed this. Like we said, the Un-Americans had already crumbled. Mm-hmm. Christian and Jericho, a good team, but kind of sad to see Storm get shuffled out. We still have Book Dust gunning for the titles. And did you think they needed to win soon?
It was kind of getting to that point. I mean, I had said at our Unforgiven vault that I thought it had a shelf life. And I still think it did, but maybe this was the first point where you thought to yourself, well, maybe probably now is a good time to just pull the trigger and let him have it, unless you had something planned for the big show the following month at the Garden. Otherwise, probably we're better off just doing it now. But right. These guys had just won the straps. And incidentally, JR, we finally have an evolution, no pun intended, of Christian.
Yes.
Finally ditched that cheesy indie porn star mesh shirt.
Yep.
And now has kind of a regular one, you know, like a singlet.
Yeah, still got
straps.
The singlet, but at least it's regular material.
Regular material, and but he still has the hair. Although the hair didn't look as bad. He slicked it back a little bit, so it doesn't look as fluffy. But any event.
No, still all the old vestiges of the tag division are gone now, as we've mentioned a few times here.
Mm.
And really moved into a new era. Book Dust still very over. Booker getting huge pops and feels like a legit star here in the opener. A very hot stop for the challengers. Christian makes progress. With the tights, like we mentioned, no more mesh, but we're getting there. Goldust moving great, and I like the stooging here by Jericho and Christian. That'll kind of become their calling card early in matches, kind of getting bumped around like goofs. Yeah. I thought it was a good choice to have Goldust be the face in peril. The crowd was really hot for Booker on the apron. Goldust's power slam, by the way, is one of my favorites. He always has such good torque and turn on that.
Yes, I agree.
He had a really nice one here. Bookdust has a good comeback. We get the shattered dreams from Goldust, more stooging. And again, perfect for a blend of goofiness and legitimacy with Christian and Jericho. I thought that was one of the benefits over Storm. It's just Jericho's kind of legitimacy as a main event player. Let me ask you this, guy. Is Christian one of the best tag wrestlers ever when you look at the legacy of some of the teams he's been in?
Oh, absolutely. For many reasons. Number one, good worker, clearly. And definitely, particularly as a heel, although obviously most of it was as a heel.
Right.
You know, he's a good, like you say, he's a good stooge. He begs off well. His mannerisms, his facial features. He's learned a lot in the last, well, at this point, almost 3 years to the month since the first big ladder match with Matt and Jeff at No Mercy 99. So in this three-year window, he's definitely matured and grown as a great tag team wrestler. Let me ask you this. In return, a lot of people... or a few people that I used to talk to back then that were wrestling fans, always liked Christian as a better wrestler than Edge. and obviously they were both tag team guys, kind of both grew at the same time. Do you think Christian deserved a fair shake in a singles run like Edge did? Or do you think Christian was fine in this role? You think he was?
I think it's both. I think he was fine in this role, but yeah, I think he could have had a singles, a good singles run. He'll get it. It just takes a while, but
right.
Yeah. I mean, at the time, I thought they were fairly even. I do. I think Edge's benefit was that he was bigger. I think that's what helped him move on.
Yeah,
quicker.
Taller.
He was taller and a little bit more built. Christian was very gangly and thin. So I think I think that helped. I think that helped a bit. You know that the look there. The rope breaks during the Lion Salt, which kind of hurt the flow of the match a bit. And then Christian and Jericho would cheat to steal the win. Booker and Goldust kind of choke again here. I thought they needed the win. The crowd was not happy. Fun opener. I thought they didn't get that next gear that they could have hit. So it just kind of ends. And again, I know Jericho and Christian had just won, and I think they're trying to build heat. But the problem is we just did this with the Un-Americans with Booker and Goldust. Like, we just did the heat building, the cheap win to keep the match going. But now they reset with new champions. It's like, oh, now we're going to do this at feud again. And now we're going to wait for Booker and Goldust again. I think they should have pulled the trigger here. I think Christian and Jericho were fine if they would have lost it quick, and they could have regained it at any point. I just think they needed the win here. It's like we just saw this at SummerSlam. They were in the hot eight-man at Unforgiven, and now right here, again, they lose. So it's just starting to feel a little bit like, all right, guys, you know, are we ever going to do this with them?
Yeah. I mean, I don't understand why they even had to have the Kane and Hurricane switch in the middle. Why didn't they just keep the Un-Americans, and if they were planning on breaking them up, just do it here? You know, I didn't understand the whole. Was it to give Jericho something to do because Kane won the IC? But I don't know. Maybe it was something to pacify Jericho because of what's happened with him the last few months. I don't know. They should have been fine just keeping the Un-Americans and just ending them here. But the match is fantastic. Mm-hmm. It was very, very, very good. But yeah, you almost feel like there could have been more. And I think that does kind of hinder the grade a bit. But it's not a bad match by any stretch. It's a good opener.
No, definitely, yeah. It was
good opener. You're right that the pacing could have been a little better. Yeah.
Wanted to mention something we didn't mention at the beginning, the open with Taker and Kane in the locker room.
Oh, yes.
Both having a big night, and they just look over, and Kane just goes, was it Kane who said it or Taker?
Kane says it. Kane goes,
how's your week?
So, how was your week? Taker looks at him and goes, fuck.
Yeah, that was good. So, that's all I wanted to comment on that. We go backstage. We have a new announcer, Scott, for SmackDown.
Yes.
Funaki.
Number one.
Formerly of Kai and Tai. I like this role for him. I thought it was pretty good.
That was awesome. Did they ever sell that t-shirt? They did.
Yeah, they did. The number one announcer? I'm pretty sure they did.
Did they sell it? I'm sure they did. I always wanted one. I never thought to buy one. I always liked them.
So we have an interview with Al Wilson, father of Tori, recaps his dalliance with Dawn Marie and starts a very long and weird tale that we'll be chronicling. So why don't you set up our next match then here?
Why does it seem like every storyline right now in WWE has the adjective long and weird?
Yeah.
Okay. Our next match for SmackDown match of the evening pits Al Wilson's daughter, Tori, and yes, that is her real father, which makes this even more creepy, taking on someone making their debut in a match. She's been on camera for a while, and I think she's been on pay-per-view.
Yeah.
But this is her first match. Why don't you, JR, bring her history of how she got to this point in her career?
Dawn Marie was another ECW import to pop up in the WWE during ECW import to pop up in the WWE during 2002. Mm-hmm. After spending some time in the Northeast Indies, she debuted at the ECW Arena on August 20th, 1998, as the manager of Lance Storm in his feud with Chris Candido and Tammy Sitch. The gig was only supposed to last 3 weeks, but Paul Heyman liked her chemistry with Storm and signed her full time. It doesn't say she actually got paid. She tweaked her character to be clumsy and love-struck around Storm. During the feud, Dawn went under the name Tammy Lynn Bitch as a shot at Tammy Lynn Sitch. After the feud ended, she switched it to Dawn Marie Bitch and then as Dawn Marie. Storm would eventually team up with Justin Credible to form the Impact Players, and Dawn would assist them in winning the tag team titles. Storm bolted for WCW in 2000, and Dawn was offered a contract as well, but she decided to stay in ECW with her husband, ECW star Simon Diamond. She would manage him and Johnny Swinger, in addition to providing color commentary for pay-per-views and TV, until ECW folded in early 2001. After they shut down, Dawn kept busy working the indie circuit, training with her husband, working as a stock trader, and co-hosting a wrestling radio show.
Interesting.
Dawn signed a deal in April of 2002, debuted on the May 30th SmackDown as Mr. McMahon's legal assistant, bounced around the minor angles until the fall. In the weeks leading up to the show, she began making overtures towards Al Wilson, Tori's father.
Al had been hanging around the shows with his daughter, and Dawn pounced on him to tweet Tori. And those trysts were the impetus for the match here. Of course, they had the thing where Dawn was in the shower with Al.
Mm-hmm.
And really just trying to mess with Tori as much as possible. A couple other little fun facts here. On Dawn, trained by Mikey Whipwreck and her husband Simon Diamond, started actually training in January 95. Debut match, teams with Lance Storm against Candido and Tammy on 9/19 and 98.
Mm-hmm.
Appeared in the film Carmilla as Rachel in 1999.
Hmm.
So, Al Wilson, Scott. Hero?
Something not right there. Whose father creeps around around backstage? It's not like Derek Jeter's parents, you know, following his career or anything. It's really just strange. Al Wilson hanging around with the divas. Yeah. Hey, everybody, here's my dad. I don't know.
I mean, I think it's one of those things at first was like, okay, whatever. It's funny. There's old guys. Yeah, Dawn's obviously just screwing Tori and hitting on the old guy. Okay, we'll get some laughs. So, yeah, he's in the shower. I mean, if we knew how long it was going to go on, we probably would have really rued the early moments of this feud.
Yes.
Both are incredibly hot. A good idea for them to have issues, but things get out of hand very quickly. Dawn has a good heel sneer that obviously she had perfected during her Impact player days.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Commentary is focused on the Al storyline, very heavy with Cole mm-hmm. and Taz. Nothing match. They're trying, but they're very limited. Usual non-wrestler diva fare with the law, you know, the hair whips and the basic strikes. And actually goes kind of long considering who's involved with these two. Not a lot of formal training. Almost goes 5 minutes.
Mm.
Tori gets to win, but the feud is sadly not close to being over. A bit too long. They worked hard, and Tori won, so you kind of hope maybe this is it, but it is not.
Yeah. When you look at these two, and yes, you're right, they're both hot as shit.
Right, stop. You already give me enough of an Al Wilson vibe. We don't need it.
But, oh, wow. I love that bra and panties. No. No, what
I was
going to say
is walk in on you in the shower with Machado at St. Mary's.
No. No, he'll be staying on the lawnmower. Unless he wants to give me tips on, you know, these knockout round of the World Cup. No. No, all I'm going to say before I get to the match itself, what I like about these two in this, the one thing I like about these two in the storyline, they're both different kinds of hot. Tori Wilson is that very elegant WWE girl next door hot, and Dawn Marie's kind of that ECW kind of, you know, J. Arsenio D'Amato hot kind of thing. That's like a chick that's right up his alley, you know, that kind of thing. You know,
she thinks like to do yoga.
You know what I mean? It's like two different kinds of hot. But I mean, the match is what it is. I never thought
it hasn't hit me yet that I'm going to see D'Amato on Sunday. I haven't come to grips yet that I have to go through the D'Amato experience Sunday. I'm very excited for it.
I'm stoked beyond belief. I haven't seen D'Amato. I'm going to see him actually back to back days. I'm going to see him Saturday too. So that's pretty cool. One thing I got to say about Tori, I'm not saying she's not Trish Stratus or anything like that, but I've never seen her look hideous in matches though. I mean, there's been some divas that you know don't have official work rate ability that look abysmal. But one thing about Tori, she can kind of work her way through a match without really looking hideous. And this match is like, I mean, this match isn't 5 stars by anything like that, but.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's closer to zero than five.
Yeah, but. Exactly. But it's not like you think of it and you go, all right, well, it's 4.5 minutes.
It was fine. It really wasn't that bad.
Yeah, I mean,
I think
exactly.
If you look at it from a lens of knowing where it goes, the whole thing looks out worse. But if you're looking at it as just a snapshot in time, a time waster with two hot chicks fighting and, you know, this weird storyline, it's okay. It's just the fact that we know it's not going to end for a while is what makes it even worse.
Yeah, exactly. So there you go. Tori Wilson wins with a neck breaker. Interesting. Again, about a little over 4.5 minutes, and this certainly does not end. Okay. Next up, back to Raw. Well, we've had some issues with Nate and Mr. Monday Night, Rob Van Dam. Of course, 1 month ago with Unforgiven, it was Ric Flair who turned heel and drilled RVD with the sled shot to the gut, which allowed Triple H to retain his World Heavyweight Championship. And then the next night on Raw, or the week after on Raw, happened again. I believe it was actually it was a few weeks later on Raw.
Yeah, cost him a lumberjack match for the title.
Yeah,
that's kind of RVD's like, okay, here's your shot, now you're done. kind of thing.
Yeah, so. Pretty much. They had that really. RVD had a backstage promo right before this match, which I think the problem with his promos is he just takes too long to get to the point.
Sounds familiar.
I'm just louder, more entertaining. So there you go. The match itself, not bad. That's it. I'll leave it at that.
I don't do any tricks.
There's none of those either.
to me, this is where it finally feels like RVD is just a guy. We've talked about it over the last year's worth of shows. This is, to me, where it's, okay, this is just this dude now in the mid-card. All the special flavor is just gone.
Yeah.
I thought it was a good spot for Flair, though. Back where he belongs, more fitting to see him as the heel and Triple H's manager, basically, wrestler manager. The match itself is fine for RVD. Kind of feels like a dream match, but his overall position in the card feels very compromised now. A lot of energy for RVD. Goes right at Ric Flair, finally pissed and awake. And RVD goes all over him with his usual, until Flair gets the usual tricks with the low blow and starts working the knee. And you get your basic heel Flair work from there, cutting off comebacks and picking RVD apart. Flair gets to figure four, but RVD gets the ropes, and the crowd really gets into it here. And RVD gets a nice clean win with the frog splash. Very much needed, I thought. No reason Flair needed to win. Good and solid. Nothing spectacular, but a well-earned win for RVD, and something he did need to give him any semblance of hope. So I'm glad they didn't pull the, like we saw with Jericho at SummerSlam with Flair beating him. I'm glad we had that here with RVD getting the win. So at least he's on that track. But again, it just feels like, okay, third match in. Not really a super hot feud. Just, what are we doing with this guy?
Yeah. I think he's now settled into, like, he's out of, this match puts him out of the main event thing, out of the whole Triple H feud, and now he kind of resets and we stick him where he belongs, which I hate to say that, but that's pretty much what it comes down to.
Did you like, were you taking a Flair already in this role?
Oh, yeah. Are you kidding me? Absolutely. And I think a lot of people, I remember the doctor was a little upset, being the old school, Southern Florida NWA guy that he was. He's like, Flair shouldn't be jobbing anybody. And, I said, we can all think that way. But Flair is thinking a lot like another guy would do when he comes back. We won't say who. But
well, I agree with that in theory, depending. We mentioned the Rico thing and a few others. But
right.
Here he absolutely needed to lose. He had already gotten his win by costing RVD the title twice.
Right.
That was his win. He didn't need to win a match. So.
Yeah, so I told him, we talked about it, and he wasn't the only one. A lot of people I talked to that thought this way, too. And look, I don't like seeing Ric Flair lose either, but it's what's good for business. Mm-hmm. He's the guy now that, he's the Ole when he was in 1985, when he was at the top, like Triple H is now.
He's not the world champion. That's the easiest way to
explain exactly. He's not even like the middle tier title guys like Tully or Arn were. He was like Ole, the old grizzled guy who was the foundation of the group or of the situation, and that's what he is now. And I'm fine with that. And I know he's fine with that, considering who he's working with. So I don't have a problem with it. As long as he kept putting on good matches, wins or losses to him meant nothing to me. Right. Just as long as the matches were good. And this one was pretty good. It wasn't bad. Different styles. RVD's not exactly the kind of guy Flair's used to. But, it's what a lot of workers now are like. They're a lot like how RVD works. So, but a good match nonetheless. And RVD gets a much needed win. We're about to talk about this backstage skit, JR, which I almost feel like Eric Bischoff is a metaphor for the rest of us.
Yes, I think so. So Stephanie's chatting with the Big Show when Bischoff comes in and bitches him out about being Raw property, shouldn't be talking to SmackDown's GM. Big Show gets angry, says he hasn't been on pay-per-view since July, and runs through his resume. Bischoff snaps back. Big Show grabs him, runs him into a bunch of metal trays, and storms off. So finally show a little bit of fire here from Big Show, and it would lead to some change that we'll get to. But he basically was saying he wants off of Raw and away from Bischoff. And if you remember, Show was pretty excited when Bischoff came because he thought he'd use him well.
That was part of the storyline back in May when he turned, or when they had him backstage with Bischoff, and he was kind of, you know, working for him a little bit of vengeance. So now he's fed up with his former boss and wants to move on to Friday night. So we'll see what happens there.
Yes, we will see what happens there.
After that, Scott, we got had a great history package on the history of the Intercontinental title, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. But I thought this was really well done, the video package. They went through a bunch of the champions and the big moments and title changes, and I thought it was well done.
Yeah, I agree. I agree 100%. I was not in favor of what they were doing with the IC title. I think most people weren't.
And yeah,
we'll talk,
I can't.
We'll talk more about that. Yeah, we'll talk about that when we get to that match.
Yeah, I can't think of anywhere.
Yeah, no, they're definitely not. But a good package, nonetheless. Isn't it amazing, though?
Thanks, Chris Golo.
On a side note, it's amazing that we're in 2002 now in pay-per-view history, and they haven't even started doing, like, DVDs yet. Weird.
Yeah, they have.
They've been doing pay-per-view DVDs.
Oh, right.
Pay-per-view. I mean, comps, like, that kind of stuff.
They had done a few. The Triple DVDs? H one had come out.
Did it?
Yeah, Hulk Still Rules, I think, was out already.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I thought Hulk Still Rules came out when he came back in February. Oh, wow. Okay.
No, they were all right,
so I guess
out.
A couple had come out. Okay.
I know the game was out because when I first got my PS2.
Oh, the white-covered one. That's right.
When I first got my PS2, that was like one of the first DVDs I got, and that was right after I graduated in May. So they had started to trickle out now.
Okay. I guess I'm thinking... When was the good Flair one? That wasn't until 04, but all right. Anyway, okay. Next up, back to SmackDown, and our second title match of the evening, as the Cruiserweight Championship is on the line. Your champion, as mentioned, White Trash Extraordinaire Jamie Noble and his gorgeous White Trash girlfriend Nydia, taking on former heel now babyface Tajiri. Tajiri was in that weird storyline with Tori Wilson where he was an asshole to her that vanished quick and. And now he's back to kind of being just a plain baby face. How'd this start, JR, this feud?
It stems from an attack on Noble and Nydia on the 10-17 SmackDown. Noble and Nydia were forced to face off in a match with Tajiri as a special referee. Noble won the match in quick fashion with a roll-up. After the match, he and Nydia made up and set their sights on Tajiri and attacked him, setting up this match for the title. Did you like Noble's reign so far? Still going all right in your mind?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Matches are all good. Storylines are a little odd, but maybe that was more the Hurricane storyline that they had back in, what was it, June. But we all know that Jamie Noble is an exceptional wrestler, so that's not the problem. That was never an issue anyway. And it was just enough Nydia to make his character intriguing without wrecking a lot of matches.
Right.
She didn't interfere that much. She does here. But that's fine.
Right. Well, she's kind of part
good
of
heels
the
do.
Yeah, she's kind of part of the story here. And they were really on commentary pushing how the Cruiserweights were exclusive to SmackDown. That was one of the big things they were really throwing out there. Mm-hmm. Noble with some pretty stiff strikes early. Tajiri repays the favor, as you'd expect. Really pushing the brand loyalty as Noble hits a nice running electric chair and very high impact match. Tajiri has a wild comeback with a great tornado DDT, and they're working at a pretty crisp pace, I thought. Tajiri gets a nice stiff kick to the head. Nydia distracts the ref with a kiss and gives Noble a pretty good near fall. Nydia helps again, and Noble steals a win. I really like this match, Scott. That was really fun. A great pace. Tajiri kisses Nydia, and then Noble does too, so Tajiri kicks him in the head, and that kind of paints Tajiri as a witty guy, kind of smarter than Noble. Obviously, I liked how he set them up to kiss and then just kicks him in the back of the head. I thought this was much better than the Noble Kidman match we saw back at King of the Ring.
Yes, and I like the Noble Kidman match, so I like this match even more.
Yeah, I thought this had a much better pace to it. It was a lot stiffer, and that Hurricane match just felt all over the place. To me, this one really felt like they were more locked in, and it felt like they were just had much better chemistry.
Yes, I agree. I always get upset, though, because I love the Tarantula and damn it if it's not a legal move, which is always mentioned whenever he ratchets it up. But yeah, I agree with you on the flow. I think a lot of it is that these guys are both equally matched in terms of size. I mean, Kidman, and I said it at that review that, you know, Kidman's a little bit bigger for a cruiserweight. He's like 230 and he's a little taller. So, you know, Noble and Tajiri kind of that same body size. So they were able to be a little quicker.
Right.
And, of course, the cheating at the end. And great. I love – this is one thing that I'm loving about – and tell me if you agree – that I love about Cole and Taz right now. They talk about the logic of – it's not just that somebody cheats. It's what happened because they cheated.
Right.
Like, they don't just say the cause. They discuss the effect. For instance, in this case, Nydia Tajiri goes for, like, a schoolboy or some kind of roll-up. And Nydia grabs Noble's foot, not to trip him, obviously – but because now his weight is deferred back to, like, the backside of Tajiri, and now he can put he can roll him up and get the pin. And they actually use that description, like, oh my God, his weight shifted and now he has the leverage.
Right.
Like, they describe the whole thing in, like.
No, they did a great job. They were really enjoyable, you know, on this whole show. I mean, they were great at calling the match. And like we said, Cole would set up Taz to dissect things, and they had good talking points. And it was a really good team already, a very good team. Probably, yeah. JR and Heyman were fantastic too, but in a different way. We really haven't had this type of, like, ring dissection in a long time. Probably since JR was Jim Ross.
Yeah.
It's probably the last time. I don't know if we've ever had it, honestly. I mean, unless you want to count Gorilla making shit up, but I don't think we've had ever had, like,
occipital protuberance.
Right. I mean, he tried to do this style, but I don't think we've ever had anyone actually do this style on DOTF TV. Like, I don't think we've had a pair of guys that called things almost like it was a legit sport with psychology and breaking things down and the experience of the race. Like, I don't know if we've had that before.
Right. No, I don't think so. And it's sad that, you know, what happened in this 12-year stretch, like now as we talk about a main event and on some of our other programming here on Place to Be Nation, that Michael Cole is just an abysmal play-by-play guy. And we think to ourselves, what the hell happened 12 years in a 12-year gap? Because when we get into 2003, I mean, him and Taz are on absolute fire. Maybe it's just because he was better off kind of being under the radar. I don't know. But we'll talk about his evolution as we move along. But he was fantastic here. And that just that little moment of setting up the cheating without just saying, you know, like JR and King would, by God, and, you know, go the whole, get all pissed off, and Cole, and Lawler's disarming him, and that's it. But for Cole and Taz to really analyze why Nydia did it just adds so much to them and to the match. So,
right.
So Jamie Noble retains his Cruiserweight Championship, as mentioned. Great match, a little over 8 minutes. And then at the end is funny because, you know, obviously Nydia being the horn dog at that she is, Tajiri grabs and starts laying the kisses down on her, and she's digging it. And, of course, Noble's like, you know, you think you're better, son? Yeah. And then they start making out, and then Tajiri kicks him in the back of the head. So good psychology there that Tajiri's not just some idiot. So that was actually pretty good. Just overall, just a great package, storyline and match-wise. But Jamie Noble retains his Cruiserweight Championship.
All right, a funny moment. We head backstage. Chris Benoit tells Eddie Guerrero that Chavo Guerrero is being beat up. Eddie doesn't buy it. He acts like a goof. And, oh, I'm sure you think you want me to go in that room and find out. And he's not. He's really going over the top with his acting and going crazy. And then it turns out Kurt Angle was destroying Chavo. So it was pretty funny. And then Benoit and Kurt just laugh. So it was a good little segment there, setting up our match later, and now we have a match next.
Yes, your unification match is upon us.
Time to play the game. It's amazing how you knock me off my feet.
Boyfriend's back and you're gonna be in trouble. Hey, love.
New era, new song?
I was going to say, and you added a song that came out before you were in kindergarten. I'm impressed. Very good. Very so what are you going to say? By WrestleMania 20, it's gonna be like a 45-minute montage.
Well, what are you going to do, you know?
Oh, God. All right. Let's talk about Kane first,
okay,
individually, before we get to the rest of the shit show.
Pedigree. I'm on my knees waiting for you, Hunter Helmsley.
Hey, Morty, isn't Madonna like Hadassah? Anyway, so Kane, since coming back from injury, on a big roll, and came back at right before Unforgiven, was part of that 8-man tag, got the pin, and ended up winning and losing the tag straps, as we mentioned earlier. And then, of course, winning the Intercontinental Championship, defeating Chris Jericho. And that night, everything changed.
Kane was on a real roll returning from injury. First, he and Hurricane had upset Lance Storm and Christian to win the tag titles. Kane defeated Jericho to win the IC title, like you mentioned, Scott. And Kane earned this title shot as Eric Bischoff announced he'd be merging the world and intercontinental titles, essentially eliminating any sort of secondary belt. On the 10-7 Raw, Triple H and Ric Flair took out Kane's tag team partner, the Hurricane, and that night, on the Raw Roulette, Kane defended the world tag team titles on his own in a TLC match, defeated Chris Jericho and Christian, Bubba Ray and Spike Dudley, and RVD and Jeff Hardy, and Kane won the match anyway. Now, Scott, before we move on to the next part, was that moment when Kane took those tag titles down and stood tall, IC champion, tag team champion, was that Kane's biggest plateau, his biggest peak?
I don't think there's any question. He wrestled an incredible match by himself. Yeah, it was crazy. It was crazy. He had, all that gold. Yeah, he was on top of the world. I don't think Kane would ever be. And he would win world titles again in his career, but I don't think he'd ever be as hot a babyface as he was at this moment in time. They built him up. They were fantastic. Just like they did with RVD leading to Unforgiven.
I mean, when he took those titles down, you looked at that and you had to be like, all right, this guy's going to be the world champion. He's going to be the guy that's going to win this all. I mean, it just seemed like he was so over, so hot, so well built. And then, after the win, Triple H came out and said that Kane was a murderer.
What?
That he murdered his friend, Katie Vick, in a car accident. Do you remember the name Katie Vick? Kane said it was an accident. His friend was killed. On the 10-14 Raw will go down as one of the most infamous episodes in history, as Kane and Hurricane lost the tag titles back to Christian and Jericho. And then we go to a funeral home, Scott, where Katie Vick's body was in a casket. A man wearing a Kane mask, clearly Triple H, in some sort of Criscolo fantasy foreplay, comes into the room, starts talking to the body, takes off his pants. Scott, is he breathing heavy? Mariah Carey fires up. Triple H starts humping the dead body, and Scott's like, I'm ovulating, you're killing me.
God.
As Scott pulsated on his couch, there were rumors circulating, swirling, that developmental title and former WCW competitor Scott Vick would show up to take on the role of Katie's brother, but the thing was totally dropped and not mentioned again pretty much after the show. One of the worst skits in WWE history, and Scott Criscolo, I challenge you to tell me anything redeeming about anything that happened after the TLC match until this show featuring this feud.
Nope. Nope, you're making no argument out of me.
You're in heat.
You must be my lucky star. No, that was the whole thing was the shits. First off, She died 10 years ago, so that's disgusting. Why is the casket still there?
Well, it was a skit. Was, you know, it's,
well, yeah, but I mean,
let's be real. You know, it was clearly a mannequin.
I told him, get a tetanus shot then. No, nothing, nothing was good to come out of this.
I mean, talk about pissing on just... He may well have just given Kane a golden shower on Raw, because that's what it was, right? He climbs the ladder. The crowd is going nuts. He's got the tag titles. Yeah, I mean, just red hot, red hot. Mm-hmm. And then this. What about Katie Vick? It's like, what?
Yeah.
Who gives a shit?
Yeah.
Just have a fucking match.
I guess what cracks me up even more is we've painted Kane as this dark, you know, disfigured character who, you know, was living in the bowels of the Undertaker's family's, you know, business of bodies or whatever, and Paul Bearer is humping Taker's mom.
Home,
or
what, you mean?
Yeah, thank you. Well,
business of bodies.
Well, I was thinking of some other word.
You're
but
all
yeah,
hot and bothered. Triple H doesn't need heat. You got enough for both of them.
I had another word than funeral home, but I couldn't get to it. So anyway, he's this total disfigured character. And
Griscolo, let's head over to the business of bodies and hump some mannequins. Okay.
Why can't I wear the Kane mask? No.
Come on, let's hop in the pink Corvette and head over to the body shop. You know, bang some mannequins. I'm in. Turn it up, Griscolo. Put on the 80s on 8.
Two, you idiots driving around with your sunglasses on, song playing, head into the business of bodies.
The pink Corvette version of Girls in Cars.
The Barbie convertible. I picture you guys living in some stupid dollhouse, basically.
And then who walks in the room but D'Amato?
That's my girl in the casket.
Okay. Anyway, what we've just done in the last like 4 or 5 minutes is more entertaining than anything in those few weeks. That's for sure. But anyway, so he's supposed to be this mangled character, you know, in a funeral home and, you know, Taker's brother and everything. Meanwhile, I was at a party with Katie Vick.
I know.
Oh, yeah, you're hanging out at a party.
I was at a frat party playing beer pong, banging this bitch in the back of the car. It's like, what?
Yeah, and it's Charlie completely, and
it is completely revamped the whole story of Kane.
Oh, so stupid.
Oh, my God.
So Katie lost our last Beirut game.
Me and Katie Vick are driving from the prom. watch out. Where, oh, where has my Katie gone? Kane took her away from me.
I didn't realize this was on BKM's iPod.
I mean, I would have forgiven them all if they had played this song for the video package and like recreated the whole thing instead of just Triple H begging the mannequin. If he was really creative, that's what he would have done.
Did you see Kane though in like jeans and like a Soundgarden t-shirt,
right, and the mask on? I mean, how absurd. Soundgarden t-shirt, how fucking absurd, right?
Kane last Beirut match and we gotta go.
It's like something out of Freaks and Geeks.
Jesus.
Oh, hi, Mrs. Weir. Can I take your daughter out?
Just fathom this. Close your eyes and just fathom Kane sitting next to Rich Rubino in a poli-sci class. It's like,
well, we need a whole.
No problem interviewing him now, though. That's
look, you
want
to you want to increase subscribers on the network. We need Kane the teenage years as like a TV show. Just that'd be fantastic.
Saved by the Bell with Kane.
Saved by the Bell, the Kane years. We know Belding's up for it.
Oh God. Starring as Katie Vick.
Don't call me preppy.
Who was the blonde girl on Melrose Place? I can't think of her name now. Josie Bissett. That's Katie Vick. I can't use your girl, Tiffany, because she was already on.
Gone.
All right. Quigley's getting in the match. What's worse is the match. I mean, it's a match. I think that's even the worst part. I think we were expecting a really great brawl. And I mean, they've been in the ring before, and I mean, a year and a half earlier, they wrestled in the chain match at Judgment Day 01.
We got more to talk about, by the way. We're not done with the build for this thing because We got to talk about the IC title, right? So we got a lot to go here.
Yes.
So the European and Hardcore titles had already been retired earlier in the year. Yes. We mentioned that. On the 7/22 Raw, RVD defeated Jeff Hardy in a ladder match to merge the Euro and IC belts. On the 8/27 Raw, RVD defeated Tommy Dreamer in a hardcore match to merge the hardcore with the IC. RVD would then drop the belt to Chris Jericho, who would lose the title to Kane. And the original plan, Scott, was for the IC title to actually be the main belt on Raw. But many... backstage, I'll give you a hint as to who, thought it wasn't prestigious enough to carry the show, so they created the World Heavyweight title. And Kane, per the rumors, and put this on your Kevin list, originally pegged as the man to hold the top belt, but Triple H worked to have that changed, Scott. Do you think that's legit?
I think the certain person... I think the certain person not wanting the IC title to be the top belt is true, and I agree with it. It's not. It's not my lucky star.
So you don't think they could have just elevated it if Triple H had it and that was the only belt on the show?
I don't know. I mean, it's been ingrained in fans' heads for decades that the IC belt was a prestigious championship, but it's not the championship.
I'm not against that. I don't see the need to eliminate it, though, and... I want to get into the ICU. Steven gave us a lot of cool facts. But let's talk about the match.
Okay.
And then I want to talk about the title, the legacy of the title.
Okay.
And the decision to get rid of it. And then we'll take a break.
Okay.
So an insane storyline. Completely sucked all the wind, I thought, out of what could have been a great feud. Kane was red hot. And I loved the happy personality. And Triple H taking that away from him. Remember, he's like, this is the happiest I've been in a long time. He did that interview. That, to me, meant Kane needed to win.
Mm-hmm.
To justify all of this. Triple H shook all his happiness away, brought up the Katie Vick thing. He's his tortured soul. It made zero sense for him not to win here. Just an effed up angle, played up that Triple H was desperate enough to mess with Kane, but was stupid because it should have been outed as a lie. Instead, they act like it's real. Like, Kane should have admitted anything. He should have denied it, and then it turned out, you know, you want to compare him to Flair. That's a Flair thing. Remember WrestleMania 8 with the doctored pictures? That's what we needed. Not Triple H fucking a mannequin. We needed him, you know, with photos and all dubbed, you know, faked stuff like that. Just to get in Kane's head, Kane proves they're fake and then wins the title. Like, that's how you book a match like this.
Yeah, this pretty much like Savage at 8.
Right.
Almost exactly.
That's the template they should have followed, except his girlfriend's dead and not dancing around with the
Around with horses and in hot tubs. Yeah.
Split crowd for the entrances, I thought. No Flair. Triple H going it alone. Mm-hmm. Kane gets an angry start, peppering him with strikes. King was obnoxious, as you'd expect, with the Katie Vick stuff. Just really over the top with it.
Yeah.
Hunter gets a slow offensive assault, punishing the head and the neck. And a cool fact, Kane would be the first masked WWE World Champion. That was a good point I think JR made on the show there. Hunter's sleeper actually makes a little bit of sense here for once with the neck work, so it kind of worked out well. The crowd was into it, despite it being a kind of a choppy match. Flair busts up Kane's comeback. Kane fights them both off, survives the belt shot to a good pop. Hurricane comes out to run off Flair, and then he eats a nice pedigree on the floor. Kane's strong and fighting both off. Choke slams Hunter through the table. He's possessed. Flair keeps interfering. Kind of an NWA style overbooking mess here. Very combative commentary throughout with JR and King. Hunter gets a low blow and sledgehammer. Kane kicks out of that, hits a choke slam, gets a visual pin, but Flair saves again, and then a sledge and pedigree ends it, ends Kane's hot streak. I know the belt needed stability, but Kane needed this way more than even RVD did a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
He could have been made into a legit megastar, I thought, with this win. He looked like a monster as it was. Instead, we get Triple H's weasel run continuing, dominating with interference and his wiles. Okay match. Crowd is into the finish. Kane did all he could to survive, and Hunter's reign is not off to a very good start. It felt way too much. Like, Flair was just constantly friggin' interfering in this match after the midpoint. It just had no rhythm to it. And then when it does get hot, they screw it up and have Hunter pin Kane. And I mean, you could have let Kane run with it for a month or two.
Well, the funny thing is you've got – it's such a weird stretch here. Now that we're really analyzing the roster, the mid-card or the lower main events, I mean, you've got – We consistently talk about Booker T, and he's hot now, and then you've got Kane, and there's all these hot challengers. It just was like wrong place, wrong time for this new World Heavyweight title belt to need stability, and have all these guys lose. I mean, obviously you could tell that the company wasn't thinking much of it at the time, because now its first two pay-per-view title defenses are in the middle of the show and they're still focusing on the other belt. It was just not, the whole thing was just not good. In my defense of Triple H's reign, obviously will come into play in a few months. It doesn't really take effect here because, again, I mean, you've just got hot guys.
And I'm fine with the RVD one. I get it. This one had no excuse. None.
No, I mean, it was... And Kane's been a good worker. He's been a company guy. Now he's been there over exactly 5 years. And he's had to deal with a lot of crap. He had to carry his brother's crappy storylines in 2000 and 2001. And now, you know, he finally gets a stage to himself. And the bowl is circled, and we end up with a stinker of a match to end a stinker of a storyline.
Yeah, it wasn't a very good match at all.
No, it was not good.
The one thing that could have maybe redeemed it doesn't.
Yeah. So there you go. But before we wrap up, let's talk about the other thing that sucked about this storyline and what made them... Look, not having the Intercontinental Championship as the number one belt is one thing, but getting rid of it altogether? I don't get it. Did they want symmetry at the time between the two brands? One main belt?
Yeah, I think they were trying I think they felt burnt by the invasion and the era that followed it, that they felt like they really needed to pare things down and not do overkill with the titles. That's what it felt like to me, that they really were trying to just limit things a bit.
Yeah.
That they wanted to have a very streamlined one single title, one tag title, and that's it on each show. That's mm-hmm. the feeling he gets. And then you have the specialty, the cruiser, and then the women.
And the women's, right.
Separate division. So, I mean, I get the theory. And maybe they felt since the rosters were a little bit thinner with the split that you didn't have the need for it, and you could book feuds without the title. But it was a legacy. It felt stupid to cut and get rid of it. It felt like just throwing something against the wall without putting much thought into it. And you knew it was going to be back. I mean, you knew it wasn't going to stay.
No, absolutely not.
You knew
not.
There was no way they were going to keep it this way. So it's like, why even bother when you know it's only going to return sooner than later? But here's some fun facts from Steven for the IC okay. title. Mm-hmm. According to WWE.com, the belt was created on January 9th, 79. However, according to the yearbook in 03, it was created September 11th, 79. It was active for 450 days, it was September 1st, WWE.com, not January 9th.
Mm-hmm.
Stupid British dates. 101,000. Sorry.
I'm damn limeys.
Well, no, my thing logged out. Hang on one sec. Okay. 1,207 weeks, 281 months, and 23 years total active. 93 wrestlers have held the IC title to this point.
Wow. Seems like a lot.
At this time, Scott, how many reigns was the max?
At that moment?
Yeah.
Jericho. Hadn't he passed it?
Well,
with
first
six?
I asked you how many.
Oh, how many? Six.
Yes, yeah, six. And it was not six. Jericho.
No, not RVD.
I think it was Art Donovan.
Art Donovan. Not Edge.
He wants to know if you think he's great.
Razor Ramon?
Jeff Jarrett. Ain't I great?
Oh, J-E-double-F.
How many
Did
times
he have that many?
Wow. Yeah, six. How many times wow. has the title been vacated?
Twice.
Eight.
Really?
Eight vacations.
The only two I thought of was... Warrior after WrestleMania 6 and Shawn.
Well, I think it probably counts all the held up, you know, and Savio Vega and Goldust.
Savio and Goldust. And
yeah. 8 times the title was in abeyance. How many times was the title retained on TV and pay per view?
Oh, Jesus.
All right. Do you think it was over or under 500?
Under.
Over 601.
Wow. Okay.
Who had the most title retentions? I'll give you the number. 44 televised
Brett?
Title reigns, retentions. No, Randy Brett? Savage.
Wow.
Yep.
44 title retentions from February of 86 to March of 87. That's a lot.
Yeah, so he must have been on... Well, it doesn't say televised. It just says total retention, so that must count house shows and stuff.
Well, if that's the case, then yeah, that makes
sense. There's no way that he was on TV 44 times.
No, absolutely not.
At that time. Yeah. Shortest reign, any guesses?
Dean Douglas?
Yes, 11 minutes and 1 second.
Mm-hmm.
Five former IC champions also won the Royal Rumble. 11 former IC champions were called King of the Ring. 12 former IC champions went on to be WWE champion. 5 former went on to be WCW champion. 3 went to be NWA champion. 14 former IC champions are former NWA WCW United States champions. Mm. 21 were former WWE tag team champions. Mm. 5 wrestlers held it for 1 day or less. And here's a really out in left field one for you. Who was the 50th wrestler to hold the IC title? I'll give you a hint. It came between 98 and 2000.
I figured as much. Goldust.
Val Venus.
Oh, I was going to say Val, too. Damn it.
So that means 50 IC champions between 1979 and 1999. Between 99 and 02, we had 43.
Wow. Yeah, that thing bounced around like a hot potato.
If this is right from Stephen, which I'm sure it is.
Yeah.
All right, so there's the trivia contest row for 2014.
I win!
Talking points here. He gave us a couple of to bat around. Who would you consider to be an underrated IC champion, Scott?
Magnificent Morocco.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. Stephen Graham jumped off his couch. Yeah, I like that one. I'm going to go with that one, too. I mean, yeah, you got Tito, obviously, but I think
Tito,
he's probably
Hammer. Anybody in that mid-80s mm-hmm. that you may not think of, I think Morocco, Greg Valentine, Tito.
I mean, Razor, but I guess he's not really underrated, right? He's
no, Razor was so high profile.
May Owen in 97?
Mm-hmm. So much shit was going on, you barely remember he was even champion.
Any IC title matches you consider a hidden gem? Sean Jarrett in Your House 2, kind of forgotten sometimes.
Sean Razor, the sequel?
Mm-hmm.
SummerSlam 95. Triple H Rock, SummerSlam 98.
It's a really hidden gem.
Well, I wouldn't say hidden, but it doesn't get talked about as much.
It's hidden under your mattresses.
Hidden under Katie Vick's plastic head.
Did IC title help the career help careers go to bigger things, do you think?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We just
At
mentioned
least for a while. At least
we just mentioned one, Randy Savage.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Although they still were kind of using it a little bit here, like Edge.
Mm-hmm.
Could say Edge and Storm. That's a little underrated match.
Rock.
IC title match.
Yeah, Austin, Rock. If he didn't get hurt. Anybody in that stretch.
Well, he was pegged to go anyway. I'd say Rock
that's
is
true.
More likely. To me, he was bound for better things. That was a mere speed bump.
Yeah.
Anyone on the roster at the time who could have used an IC title or mid-card push but never received the belt?
What, at this moment?
I guess in general, this during the existence of this belt. I mean, you got guys like the usual Boss Man, DiBiase, Jake. Did
Those
they
guys
need
are
it?
So over
Duggan.
Anyway. No.
Yeah, they didn't really need it.
Absolutely not.
It was looked at more as the wrestler's belt anyway.
That was the work rate belt.
Yeah.
That was the work rate belt. And work rate guys had it. Perfect. Yeah. Brett.
Tornado.
Know, Steamboat. Savage. Tornado. Virgil. Oh, wait. No, wrong belt.
Yeah. I would say it was the work rate belt for a while, too.
I mean,
even into 97, 98, I think it still was. I mean, Ahmed maybe was the only one, but even he was like that. It's kind of a
Mo
work
Dib.
Rate guy when he won it.
Yeah. Mo Dib. I mean, even 98. Even 99, I mean, we talk about the mid-card there being kind of lousy, but, you know, Val, like we said, you said Val and Goldust, and, I mean, they had decent matches.
All right, let me ask you this, and then we'll go to break.
Okay.
The four names, if you're building a little, I'm not going to say Mount Rushmore, it's clearly played out. If you're building statues of the four guys that you see synonymous with the IC title, who are those four?
Greg Valentine, Razor Ramon, Chris Jericho, Shawn Michaels.
Wow, not the four I thought you were headed. I'm going to say Bret Hart, Randy Savage, the Honky Tonk Man, and Mr. Perfect. Oh, shit.
Good choices.
I want to have Razor on there, though.
Oh, I can't stand Honky.
You got to have Honky on, though. Razor, maybe Razor over Bret. I'll say Razor, Honky.
Yeah.
Razor, Honky, Savage, and Perfect are mine.
Yeah, you're right about Savage. How do you not put him on there? I mean, we just the proof's in the pudding. Yeah. 44 successful retentions in a year.
Yeah, you got to have him on there. And I think Perfect,
right.
To me, is Perfect is like the IC champion of my growing up era.
I agree. Yeah. I feel Sean, it helps Sean kind of regain some of his mojo he lost in 93.
It's not an easy question. I mean, there's at least...
No.
You could probably do six or seven that really make sense to
you
do.
You could
that.
Do an 80 statues, 90. Yeah. I mean, the eras went so up and down. Yeah.
Okay. Well, why don't we take a break?
Okay. When we return, we've got three more matches, all title matches. Two of them equal 10 stars. But first, more than 10 words, because...
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show each and every week, placetobenation.com. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today, plus be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, placetobenation.com.
Let me know you in the house.
This is the king of old school, Steve Corino, and you've heard all the rumors, and it's true. The Steve Corino Show is here. We talk about wrestling. We talk about baseball, movies, television, anything you want to talk about. New guest every week. That's right. The Steve Corino Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at placetobenation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials run and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on placetobenation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast exclusively at placetobenation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and... Shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, this sounds terrible. The Titans are wrestling. Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans are wrestling off.
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for the show and breakdown matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Bob. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling. You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week you can join Marcus Vandenberg, Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, and myself on the Kings of Sport podcast, available exclusively on placetobenation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, this is Ben Morse from Marvel.com as well as the Brad and Chad Show, and I've got a new podcast. Well, I'm part of a new podcast, Place to Be Nation's Main Event. Hosted by Scott Criscolo every other week, it's a roundtable discussion with myself, Andrew Reich, Steve Willey, Jordan Duncan, and an assortment of special guests as we talk wrestling today, the big questions, and our feelings. Please, please, please check this podcast out, because if the ratings go down, I know I'm the first head on the chopping block for Justin Rosero. See you guys every other week on Place to Be Nation's Main Event.
I'm Scott Criscolo, and your new home for sports is Place to Be Nation's Extra Point. Join me and the doctor, Giorgio Bellino, for your sports hookup, whether it's NFL, Major League Baseball, NBA, colleges, or the Cowboys MMA Blitz.
Forget about it. Plus, join me for my prescription where I will solve all the world's sports problems with my own brand of medicine.
That's Place to Be Nation's Extra Point here on PlaceToBeNation.com.
In Rhode Island and looking for great food and a fun atmosphere, well, be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers, and a fully stocked bar. Bonehead's has something for everyone. Bonehead's also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So, be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place to Be Nation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real To Us Show, every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective, and we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Don't forget to check out our fantastic podcasts as well, including the voice of Ring of Honor, Kevin Kelly, exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Also, be sure to check out our friends at the History of WWE.com, ProWrestlingOnly.com, Scott Keith blog at RSPWFAQ.net, and PileDriverWrestling.net.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly, longtime announcer with the WWE, now the voice of Ring of Honor Wrestling. No better place to be than right here on the Place to Be podcast. Make sure you tune in every week.
All right, Nation, we be back reviewing No Mercy 2002. Chad Campbell previewed our main event here tonight with his Venture Vault previewing piece, so check that out. Jersey Boys, is that Frankie Valli's next hit, Scott? His first one was about you, Big Girls Don't Cry, whatever the fuck that song was. Andrew Waltman, was it Big Girls Don't Cry? No.
Yes, it is Big
Girls. They did that, right?
Yes.
Yes,
Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons of War.
Andrew Waltman wrote that.
Sean Waltman? No.
Piece up. Andrew does a great job with the movie, so check that out.
Yes, he does.
Yep. Jeremy Nichols did The House of Horror on Jason X from 2001. Stephen Sutton had a great honor report this week previewing.
Are you in a choir now?
We don't cry.
Checking all your octaves.
Big girls. So he did the honor report this weekend previewing Best of the World, which happened last night. Scott, yours truly ordered it.
I saw the discussions. Yeah. You guys were watching it.
Supporting the boys. Yeah. Me and Steve Willie going to have a little recap up tomorrow night, Tuesday night or Wednesday probably. That'll be up. So check that out. We had a great episode of the Sports Lounge. Roger, Keith, Andy, and Jeff looking at the World Cup. We had a special guest on, Joe from the Burning River Baseball blog. It's a Cleveland Indians blog. They talked AL Central. Mm-hmm. And Sean Grandy was in the house to talk NBA draft. So that was a lot of fun stuff there for the Sports Lounge guys. We had a couple of Matt Hardy-related things up. He was on this week's Steve Corino show and also had a straight shoot, him talking about Best in the World, the releases on WWE from Aubrey Stitterson in the straight shooting YouTube series. So we have a little collaboration going on with Aubrey, so be sure to check that out as well. The High Spot looked at Pat Patterson in a very poignant piece by Glenn Butler. Please, please, please check that out. Mm-hmm. Looked at the budget cuts as well. And Wrestling's Best Mullets in honor of Michael Elgin's mullet meeting its demise. New Ring of Honor world champion Michael Elgin, that is. The movies of the P2B generation continued on with 1982. E.T. was a big one that year, so please check that out. Scott, did you know they're making a Saved by the Bell Lifetime movie?
They are. Unauthorized.
Yes, and that I took a look at that, so that is up as well. My piece on the possibilities that could go down there. Russell Sellers had a review of How to Train Your Dragon 2. New episode of the Pro Wrestling Super Show talking about the Clash of the... Well, kind of talking about the Clash of the Champions with quite the crew, Will and Johnny Sorrow. And from what I'm told,
things go way off the rails in that one. Mm-hmm. Roger Morissette was joined by Chad Campbell to look at Vengeance 2003 and the newest Cowboy Goes to Class. Chad had his working boots on last week. Also looked at the Smash Wrestling Rival Schools free download. So he checked that out and reviewed it. Joel Barnhart paid tribute to the late Tony Gwynn, and he also does that on this week's Extra Point, right, Scott? That comes out on probably Tuesday or Wednesday as well.
Yes, yep. He joined us to talk Tony Gwynn, and Andrew Reich joined us to talk the NBA draft coming up, too.
Well, there you go. So that is your PlayStimulation.com update. Visit us each and every day on Facebook, facebook.com/PlaceToBeNation, at Place2BNation, or info@PlaceToBeNation.com.
Okay. Back to Arkansas. Next up, we have back to SmackDown to kind of cleanse our palate from that absolute disaster we just had to deal with. Time to cleanse our palate with some pure work rate and maybe one of the most unheralded matches in the history of the company right here. It is for the newly created, and JR will give us the background, the WWE Tag Team Championships, a.k.a. the Blue Belts. The reason they're called the Blue Belts is, well, because they're SmackDown and they have blue. But the World Tag Team Championships on Raw would end up changing as well, and we'll let you know when that happens, in terms of the physical belts themselves. There was a tournament.
There was. Stephanie McMahon said that the there'd be a tag titles on her show, like you said, with the establishment of these belts. Raw belts would be called the World titles, as you mentioned, Scott. And the Blue Belt Tournament took place on October 3rd through October 20th, and here are the results. On 10-3, we saw Los Guerreros, Eddie and Chavo Guerrero, defeat Mark Henry and Rikishi. D-Von, Reverend D-Von, and Ron Simmons, formerly Farouk, advanced over Billy and Chuck. Have they fallen off the face of the earth or what?
They don't even get a tournament win.
Jeez.
Wow.
Quickly fall to D-Von and Ron Simmons.
Yeah.
The next week, Chris Benoit and Kurt Angle, who were forced to team by Stephanie McMahon. She had said, I know you're at each other's throats and you had your unforgiven match, but we want you to be a team, because we want the best in the world out there, and if you get into any kind of physical altercation with each other, you'd both be suspended for 6 months with no pay. In the final match in the opening, I'm sorry, Chris Benoit and Kurt Angle defeated Billy Kidman and John Cena. Edge and Rey Mysterio defeated Brock Lesnar and Tajiri. Kind of an odd match. From what I recall, I don't think Brock Lesnar showed up for that one. So,
yes.
On 10-17, Angle and Benoit defeated the Guerreros, and Edge and Mysterio defeated D-Von and Ron Simmons, and that set up the finals here for the new tag team titles. And Scott, I kind of like this match. What do you think?
And I know you pretty well that Bryce Cotton comment you just said was simply to see if my Facebook thing would bang off in the middle of the comment.
Bryce Cotton, Chad Ford has him going end of the second round today.
Going to the Pacers?
Yeah, he's it's the first time he's popped up in the mocks, so it's good. That means he's getting some momentum. So, Scott, tourney final here. A great idea for the Pure Wrestling Show, and these are the four guys you want in there. I was a little surprised. I thought the Guerreros may make it, but you can't argue with these four. Stephanie had made put Kurt and Benoit together to make the division awesome, which is great as well. Stephanie's been a pretty good GM, I thought.
She has been.
Focusing on the right things. Kurt toys with Ray early. Great breakdown and commentary of the two teams. Cole and Taz at their best in this match.
Mm-hmm.
Ray was super fast, showed nice frustration when trapped, but would figure things out. I love that. Like, at one point, Kurt had a go behind, and Ray was kind of like aggravated that he was stuck, and then you see him think, and then he works his way out of it. I thought that was a really nice touch. And, super, super fast here. Edge hanging on the mat with Chris Benoit a little bit early on, some nice reversals in offense. You get a really good heat segment on Edge, and Kurt and Benoit are great at cutting those off with a big, both big and small spots to cut off the comebacks. Edge has a great top rope superplex, which is the move to me that never gets old. I could always watch top rope superplexes.
Yes, absolutely.
Great Ray-infused comeback. The pace gets going again. The crowd is just hyped here. And we get a second heat segment, punishing Ray's back. Kurt has an awesome, fantastic backbreaker. And then a suplex, just tossing Ray like a rag doll. That backbreaker was just sick. And then the suplex just chucks him over his head. A really nice assisted top rope Frankensteiner by Edge and Ray, where Edge catapults Ray up to the on top of his opponent, and he takes him over with the Frankensteiner. Crowd is just manic on some of these near falls, and I loved Edge and Ray's overall unique teamwork, where Edge would like use Ray as a weapon a lot of the time, throwing him around the ring.
Yes, I like when he did the, I don't know if it was a plancha or like a...
Yeah, he picked him up and threw him.
Picked him up and just pretty much whipped him over, and he went on to Benoit outside. That was pretty good.
Wild finish. 619 busts up the crossface attempt, angle slam, and Edge gets a roll up for a super near fall. Edge throws Ray into a moonsault on the floor. That might be the one we're thinking of there, Scott.
Yeah, that's it. Yep.
Angle finally gets an ankle lock, but Edge counters it to get one of his own, kind of playing off their feud from earlier in the year. Angle reverses back, and that is it. Edge has to tap. A fantastic, awesome match. True match of the year candidate. A war with a hellacious pace. And to me, 22 minutes felt like 12. And to me, that's one of the best compliments you can give a match. When.
Yes, absolutely.
So I was watching this with Charlie. And he's like, oh, that wasn't bad. You know, that was really good for a 15-minute match. And I'm like, dude, this is 22 minutes. And he's like, wow. And it really felt a lot quicker than it was. And I'm going to ask you, I'm going to put you on the spot, Scott. Michael Scott's tots. Was this the greatest tag team match in company history to this point?
Yeah, I can't think of any that even. I mean, have we ever ranked? Well, let's put it this way: have we ever ranked a tag match 5 stars? I mean, well, Heart Foundation Brainbusters.
You got the
pretty close.
Yeah, are we discounting TLCs? What did I say? Straight.
Yeah,
match.
Those are multi guy matches. Okay. We're talking straight tag.
Match.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, unless you're Roger Morissette, and the Heart's Brainbusters is good. I mean, I can't think off the top of my head of one that comes close. So one maybe in the vicinity, but not 5 stars. Austin and Shawn against Bulldog and Owen.
Bulldog and Owen. Yeah.
Maybe Hart's Bulldog somewhere in there.
Yeah. I mean, could you name a better, more entertaining, awesome combination of singles guys on a tag team than Kurt and Benoit?
At this time.
They're amazing together.
I mean, at this time, too. This really locked in. And Benoit's comeback better than ever. And Angle's just on another planet right now. And Ray was so fast, and Edge was the perfect complement to him. And it was really just a hell of a match. I mean, I can't think any of the top of my head. There was not a gimmick that was better than this. I mean,
since,
easy 5-star match.
Since, and I know 01 he was really good, but since Backlash, is this Kurt's best run?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
I mean, is he not on fire?
Yeah.
He's crazy right now. And I guess you'd have to say to this point, is there, I mean, yes, the matches with Austin were great. Is there a better guy he has chemistry with at this point in the 3 years he's been with the company than Benoit?
I like his chemistry with Ray.
Yeah.
In the ring.
That's true. Yeah.
You know, him and Benoit, and they have a lot of backstory, which is cool too. You know, they feuded, they fought, they've teamed and everything else. So it's a good, they're real. You could feel the characters that they, you could feel the relationship come out in the ring and, I there's not much more to say. This is an awesome. If you've never seen it, you need to run out and see it. Perfect illustration of what tag wrestling can be: the double heat segment, the gold on the line, and the being the first tag team champion. So they really built up the prestige in that, and I thought it was really well done. I mean, to me, this is like the snapshot of what SmackDown was this fall, right here.
Yes.
This match. This is the one you think of. Like, this is what we've been getting for the last couple of months, and what we'll continue to get over the next month or two as well.
And I think I don't think anybody should say that Edge has taken a step down. Oh, now he's stuck in tag feuds.
No,
absolutely not.
This is a
absolutely
different level. This is a different tag feud.
Yeah.
This isn't just, you know, them feuding with the Un-Americans or something. I mean, this is a tag feud. This is main event level tag.
Yep. Did you like the blue belts?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I like the whole idea. I mean, it made sense. If you're not gonna have the tag teams jump, you gotta have a division on both, so I liked it. I thought it was good.
Did you like the belt? I mean, did you like?
Yeah,
the
I do.
Belts?
Yep.
Yeah, I thought they were cool looking. I liked them.
Well, it was more of the brand division and loyalty. I thought it was smart the way they were doing it. They were really associating colors and knights and commentary. Mm-hmm. They're really going all in here.
Yep.
With the brand split, this is what they needed to do. They needed to push the chips in and say, we're going to create legit competition by making the shows as different as possible. When you think SmackDown, you should think blue should pop in your head. When you think Raw, red should pop in your head. And it does still to this day, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, somebody wants to think of a tag match that's better than this one in history, hit one of us up on email if you want. Scott C. at placetobenation.com.
Mm-hmm. Or just Justin on the Facebook page as well.
Or hit us on the Facebook page too. Yeah. But yeah, that's a good one for people to think about.
Noodle it over.
Think about it. Noodle it. Noodle it. Canoodle it. Because I don't know. Brainbuster's Hearts comes pretty damn close. But I don't even know. Nah, and you're also talking about two different eras. Well, you're also talking about two different eras of tag wrestling.
Yeah, but they're both kind of similar.
But they are similar. Yeah.
No, I mean, I think it's... I love Hearts Brainbusters, but that's like a 4 to me. Mm. To me, it's a whole grade off from this one. This is a... I had nothing wrong with this match.
This is bonkers. Wow, is Heyman just... He just knows what to do. They gave him just the right roster of guys and... And there you go. And the semifinal, if you could find it, the semifinal between Kurt Benoit and Eddie and Chavo is just as fantastic.
Right.
It's not at the level of this, but it's pretty damn good.
Yep. It was an awesome tournament. It was a great final. Very fitting for what this show was at this
Best,
point.
Best belt tournament ever?
WWF? I mean, just straight work rate? Probably, yeah.
Yeah. We all want to like the IC tournament after Warrior had to let it go, but God, some of it was like 3 countouts and
no, it's not very good. The best match was not part of the tournament. There was the rematch
to
the finals.
Yep, that's on the Saturday's main event DVD. Yeah, I mean, best combination of guys and just amazing. D-Von and Ron Simmons, what a combo! I just realized that, kind of strange. Yeah, this match is if you have the network, go on to. No, although you're gonna have to look for it. Because the way it works on the network, Benoit matches are not identifiable. You know how you have the little dots that you can find matches. Benoit matches, they don't do that. But there's a huge on the second half of the timeline. There's a gigantic gap, and there is where that match is. You just got to find the start of it. They don't give you the button to find it. That's their little way of not emphasizing Benoit matches. In any event, 5 stars, fantastic, and Kurt Angle and Chris Benoit are your inaugural WWE Tag Team Champions, and well, well deserved. But take nothing away from Kurt and Ray, Edge and Ray.
Nope.
Okay. Any backstage stuff in between here? I don't think so, right?
We actually missed one. It was before that match. Hang on, I have it right here. Stephanie was backstage trying to talk sense into this girl, Tracy.
Right. Yes.
Stephanie gets her to admit that she's was fudging her facts with Undertaker and her relationship, but there's a camera in the room, which is retarded in its own right.
Yeah.
Very stupid stuff. She wants Mark back. Taker was in the room, calls her a lying bitch, and Stephanie throws her out. So, also backstage, we have Taker gets a shot in his hand to numb it before the main event. We'll talk about that hand injury.
Yes, which was considered unethical.
Yes.
What was the guy's name? Phil? Come on, Phil.
Give me a shot. I can't do it. All right.
I'll do it myself. Okay. Again, another title match. Back to Raw.
Yep.
The WWE Women's Championship on the line. Your champion, just as hot as anything, Trish Stratus. And she's been just rock solid for 2002, JR, with and without the title. She's been like one of the foundations of Raw, really, in terms of just consistency on TV. Solid women's matches.
Consistency on her chest.
Consistency that she lets everyone see. Consistent for you. But a new opponent. Different. After beating Molly Holly, getting her belt back, she starts a feud with someone new. Who is that?
In early 2000, Lisa Marie Veron ran into China at a local gym. China told her she had a good luck and recommended she get into wrestling. Ferran had grown up in California and had worked the bodybuilding and fitness competition circuit. During her time as a fitness model, she met Trish Stratus, who was also working that circuit. At China's behest, she put together a tape and sent it to the then WWF. After a brief stint at UPW in June, Bruce Pritchard hired her. Her first on-air role was one of Godfather's hoes. After Godfather joined the RTC, he turned on his hoes and powerbombed Victoria through a table in a very nasty bump. In November, she was taken off TV and sent down to the developmental territory in Memphis. There she worked on her in-ring skills and honing her character, and she returned to the big time on July 7th, 2002 Heat, immediately attacked Trish, who she claimed had backstabbed her back in the fitness model days, and Victoria's gimmick was an interesting one where she portrayed a sadistic, demented heel that often heard from and spoke to different voices in her head. 4 months after she showed up on Heat, she makes her pay-per-view debut here. Trained by Mike Bell and Tom Howard, her debut match was on March 3rd, 01 against Jason Sensation. Interesting. It was part of the group Revolution in OVW.
Mm-hmm.
So, Victoria.
You know who else Jason Sensation was?
Yes, we know.
What am I? A Renard Bark?
Woo! This match here, Scott. Victoria's debut, I thought, was a good new challenger for Trish. Mixed things up, mm-hmm. kind of get away from the Molly feud. Victoria manhandled her a bit. Very smooth, a nice slingshot leg drop. Pushing things a little bit with the work, experimenting more now. You can tell they put more focus into the prep, and you can see that they had really started to practice more and work together backstage. Trish gets a roll-up win. Good for her legitimacy, but I thought it kind of hurt Victoria out of the gate. King keeps gloating about the women are Raw only. Not as impressive as the Cruiserweight, sadly, but he was really trying.
Yeah, obviously.
And after the match, Victoria cracks Trish in the face with a very stiff kick after the bell.
I think Victoria was a breath of fresh air for the division. She's not one of these dainty divas who, you know, doesn't really want to get hit and will just do a lot of bouncing and rolling around. She'll get down and dirty, and she will accentuate that philosophy next week's vault. I like the match, and I think you are seeing an elevation of the division. King is not totally wrong. I mean, it's not the cruiserweights, but. But definitely someone like her will help Trish along because Molly was a different kind of worker, and a lot of the Jazz was probably the closest in terms of real physical.
Right.
And Victoria is going to take it to another level.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see that next month at the Garden. But it was fine. It was fine what it was. I don't know if the loss, I guess it kind of hurt her a little bit, but
she comes in as this like top challenger and kind of crazy, and then she just loses her first match. But yeah, you can't keep dropping the title back and forth, but maybe a DQ would have worked here better. Have her snap and
maybe. Yeah, that's true. A lot of hair pulling or some kind of, you know, old school Velvet McIntyre moolah kind of shit, you know. So there you go. So Trish Stratus retains her women's championship decent match.
All right, we go backstage. Actually, we go over to the world, where Rikishi talks about Hell in a Cell, and he picks Undertaker to win our main event, which is...
The WWE Championship on the line in a rematch from Unforgiven. The Undertaker challenging Brock Lesnar. But this time, Hell in a Cell. For the first time in WWE history, Hell in a Cell twice... In 1 year.
On pay-per-view. We've had two in 1 year, 98 on TV.
Yeah, so we had them on Raw. Yep, you're right. First time ever on pay-per-view, of course, back in May at Judgment Day. Mm-hmm. Triple H defeated Chris Jericho. Sixth Hell in a Cell for The Undertaker. Fifth on pay-per-view.
Yep.
Because, of course, I just sent one of the Raw matches in, was it July or June, something like that. So, what do you say? Before we get to the match, let's talk about the gap in the storyline.
Okay. So after these two men... Yep, sorry.
Yeah, no, go ahead. No, go ahead.
After these two men brawled to a no contest and Unforgiven, the feud raged on. On the 9/26 SmackDown, Brock attacked Taker after a match with Matt Hardy, beat him down with his belt, and busted the dead man open. A week later, Heyman told Brock that Stephanie was sure to force him into a rematch and that there were rumors of a stipulation. That night, Taker and Brock had a brief brawl in the ring during which Taker broke his hand. The following week, more damage was inflicted on Taker's hand during a brawl with Hardy. Later that night, Heyman, Brock, and an unknown lady hit the ring. Heyman made the announcement that Taker had requested a Hell in a Cell match in No Mercy and intimated that it was a sure lock from Stephanie. He also introduced the lady as Tracy, someone who knew deep down what kind of man Undertaker was. But before they could continue, Taker came out and chased Brock and Heyman off. Tracy grabbed the mic and went on to explain that she had been sleeping with Taker for the last 3 months. She yelled at Taker, saying she didn't know he was married and his wife was pregnant. She had agreed to keep the relationship secret, and now she knew why he had requested that. She apologized to Sarah and for revealing this on TV while Paul and Brock laughed it up on the floor. Taker grabbed the mic, said he had no idea who Tracy even was, but she slapped him and took off. Finally, on 10-17, Taker came out and admitted he did know Tracy, but he hadn't seen her in 7 years. The relationship ended a long time ago before he even met Sarah. Later that night, Taker assaulted Brock and busted him open after the match with Chuck Palumbo. In the final segment of that show, Stephanie came out and announced that despite Taker's broken hand, he would be allowed to compete on the pay-per-view. They brawled one last time and faded out with a shot of Taker's bloody cast. Tracy, just a fly in the ointment of what was a really good feud and didn't need it. I didn't mind the Paul Heyman mind games, but we didn't need this. The rematch was enough. The hand was enough.
Exactly.
Brock trying to be the best and beat Taker at his own game was enough. The real
Hell in a Cell should be enough.
We didn't need this drama, this nonsense.
Oh,
I mean,
my God.
The only positive to it, and I guess if you want to compare the two, is this isn't as in your face, and they write it out before the match even starts, whereas the Katie Vick stuff was just so over the top. This one, to me at least, is like background noise and is played off. Like, this is how the Katie Vick thing should have been played off. This is played off as Paul Heyman mind games, whereas that was played off as real. To me, that's the difference between the two.
And Tracy's still alive.
Well, that too. Obviously.
And Paul Heyman did try to hump her. But again, great champion, great challenger, great gimmick, great stipulation. Enough said. Why do we got to humanize? I think this is like the last straw where I said to myself, all right, I think we're done humanizing Taker.
Yeah.
All right.
Him and Kane apparently were getting busy back in that 7 years
Yeah, really?
Ago.
Yeah, back in the day, huh? I mean, come on. Utter nonsense.
Big rematch, as you mentioned, the second Cell of 02. A lot of intrigue heading into this one without having a big bumper in the match. I don't know if you remember that. There was a lot of question about what they were going to do.
Yeah.
Similar to the one earlier in the year. Brock really needs a convincing win here. Good gimmick with Taker's hand. Besides the stupid Tracy stuff, I thought that the build was okay. Brock's roughhouse ground and pound style right away. Targets the hand. Taker uses the cast, but it hurts him as well. Brock was busted open early from the cast. Crowd was kind of a hushed and buzzing here. One of my favorite kind of reactions that a crowd can have.
Yeah.
Taker would target Brock's cut, uses the fence and some strikes. Heyman is very active and screaming at ringside, reaches through the foothold in the cage and tries to help, but Taker kicks him, and then he gets rammed into the cage, and he starts bleeding a gusher on the floor. Brock turns the tide, uses Heyman's belt as a weapon. They tie the cast to the cage and start bashing it with a chair and a great attack.
That's awesome.
A tremendous story with the hand. I thought it was a unique and interesting attack and very different, not an appendage you usually see worked over. Brock tries to tear off with the cast, but Taker keeps fighting him off. Taker has desperate offense. Anything, anytime Brock goes for the cast, Taker would just animalistically fight him off. Brock finally gets it off. Taker bleeds, and just a gory, gory, gross blood gushing from his head, just completely covered. Brock is a methodical assault. Taker's pretty much out on his feet as Brock is just punishing him. Taker tries to come back. He ends up busting up Brock's hand a bit, and then we get all the big reversals to bring it home. Taker, lost my point here.
You lost some blood.
Oh, my Lord. Just thinking of the blood there. Taker's blood was just nasty. Brock reverses
crazy.
Brock versus a tombstone into an F5 and finishes with one F5, which I loved. Super, super strong finisher. Complete and utter bloody war. Vicious. No big bumps were ever needed in this, thanks to the hand, the heavy blows, and the blood. A great win for Brock. No Heyman needed, and Undertaker did a great, clean job here. I love this match. Again, arguably maybe the best Hell in a Cell, second best maybe, probably top two at this point. And I love that they didn't need to go on top of the cage. They just they told an old school story. The Tracy shit was out the window as soon as the match started. It was just two guys beating the piss out of each other, covered in blood, the broken hand. There's so much good stuff in the mix here. So really, really well booked match and a fantastic main event, and definitely Brock's best match, I'd say, in his run here.
No doubt about it. Does it surpass Taker Shawn? Maybe. I think maybe more for the back and forth brawl, whereas at that one, you know, Sean pretty much takes a 33-minute shit kick until Kane debuts.
Right. That one may be a little bit better. Mm. That's probably about it, though.
The only thing I don't like about this match, and I have it on my comments on our written review, and I realized watching it today the same thing. Brock needed to he was still learning the ropes of main event matches. You just went 27 minutes with one of the greatest guys ever. You barely got Taker up for the F5, dropped him, barely got the pin, which is what you're supposed to do. And then 2 seconds later, you're geek up, run up the side of the cage, stand on top of it and act like you just beat, you know, Barry Owen in a 3-minute squash. It's almost like he didn't just sell 27 minutes of getting the shit kicked out of him. So he still needs to learn the art of selling what he just did.
To me, though, that felt
at King of the Ring.
It felt kind of like an adrenaline rush thing to me. You know what I'm saying? Like
maybe.
I don't know. Like one last burst. I was okay with it.
It doesn't take away from the match itself. The match itself is incredible. I mean, has Taker ever bled that much before? I mean, he was a disaster. I was getting a little nervous.
It was really gory. It was really gory. Just if you haven't seen this in the Hell in a Cell collection, this is one you need to check out. Just because it's a completely different type of Hell in a Cell match.
Yeah.
Totally different. You don't get any any big bumps or anything like that. It's all just psychology. And
just ground and pound. You know, they use the cell, but they don't get too dramatic with moves. I like that Paul took a bump. He was bleeding for the last, like, 16 minutes of that match. Just fantastic. Got to watch it.
Two legit WWE Match of the Year contenders on one show.
Yeah.
I think we severely underrated this in our original review. I mean, you gave it a C+. I gave it a B-. And I know the undercard is lacking here and there. But, geez, we get, like, a 5 and a 4.5 in the two biggest matches. And then the undercard supports it okay outside of a couple spots. I think this is... I'm not going to say it's a classic top five pay-per-view, but it's a fantastic show thanks to the two big matches. I mean, those are legit all-time classics that completely hold up today in a fantastic way. So those are two really, really good matches if you haven't seen. Well worth checking out, Scott. So we only got two pay-per-views left in 02. Mm-hmm. Was around a very, very interesting year overall.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, let me ask you this. As of this moment, not in hindsight, but at this moment, is SmackDown the better show?
Oh, yeah. I don't think it's even a question.
Did they mean for SmackDown to be the better show?
No. I mean, it depends what you mean by better. I mean, Raw was still pretty decent at this point. It wasn't awful. But SmackDown was clearly better, way better in the ring.
Well, they hadn't entirely settled into whatever Triple H's vision of what this title was supposed to be and this feud and all that kind of stuff. Of course, you know, a huge return comes in the next couple weeks as we head to the Garden. So, you know, we're still establishing stuff on Raw in terms of roster. But right now, at least SmackDown, you could say SmackDown is not, you know, a stinker from the announcing to the... I love Stephanie. I never thought I'd say that. She definitely has...
Well, she fit the East GM. They did a nice job matching the GM with the style of the show. So Heyman has a sleazy entertainment show with all the...
Oh, you mean Bischoff.
Bischoff. What did I say, Heyman? Bischoff Heyman. With the, you know, the sluts and the lesbians and the crazy storylines. It was Nitro. It felt like Nitro-y. And Stephanie did a great job of being kind of the calm GM. Just wants to have a great show for the fans. No drama. And like to me, that fit the tenor and tone of SmackDown.
Mm. Yeah, I agree. I agree 100%. So there is No Mercy 02. If you have the network, hop on and watch it. It's not a show that'll disappoint you. Mm-hmm. If you can pass the Katie Vick to world title match bizarreness, you've got some stellar.
And even that's good for a laugh nowadays. I mean, at the time, it felt like the worst thing in the world.
It won't be the last time a Triple H title match gives us a laugh. I'll admit that.
Gives me the shits.
All right, so there you go. No Mercy 2002.
All right, Scott, we are done for the week. This Wednesday, we have episode 12, the main event. Who you got in tow?
The core four will be back. Jordan and Willie and Rish and Ben, because it is prelude to pay-per-view. So we will talk about Money in the Bank and get you ready for it and get our predictions.
And Hachi Machi, Scott Griscolo, because our guest on Kevin Kelly's show is Maria Kanellis.
Wow.
Ring of Honor. And
well, you've been waiting for that moment, huh?
Well, I'm trying to get this to be the first video one, so I'm working on it.
Really?
Even though we'd have to deal with Kevin and his pale, pasty face.
Oh, God.
We'd get Maria.
Girl Scout cookies in his mouth.
We'd get Maria as the payoff. So.
Let's make sure the cat doesn't jump on his headphones.
I'm like, kidding. I don't think we're going to get video lined up. But I can't wait to talk to Maria. I'm putting together my case now as to why she should not marry Mike Bennett. So we can go over that. But yes, we'll be breaking down Best in the World, and we'll look forward to Money in the Bank, too. Next Monday, Survivor Series 02, Scott. We'll be here recapping that. Next Wednesday, back in the Live Watch studios, we'll have Willie, we'll have Chad Campbell, we'll have Roger Morissette. Hulk Hogan's going to be back in town on Raw, February 15th and 22nd episodes from 1993. So
looking forward to that. Yep.
Yeah, really looking forward to that. Scott, I will be seeing you this weekend.
Yes.
Money in the Bank. We'll have the crew. If anyone else is attending and we haven't heard from you, let us know. We'll give you the plans. We have a really good crew going. We've got Roger. We got D'Amato. Aaron George coming down from Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. McGinn. Mr. Flanagan. Roger's cousin-in-law. Is that it? What else we got? I know we got eight of us, right?
Yeah.
Did I miss someone?
You and I.
Me and you. Me and you, McGinn, Aaron. So that's four. Andy.
Roger.
Five. Roger, six. Roger's cousin is seven. And D'Amato.
D'Amato, eight. There you go.
There you go. That's the crew. Looking forward to it. Also, Scott... Another announcement that we have. Buy you a drink. One drink turned into three or four. And then that thing got into his car. And they drove away someplace so far. Now, babe, the time has come. How'd you like to have a little fun? And she said, if we could only please be on our way, I would not run. That's when things got out of control. She didn't want to. He had his way. She said, let's go. He said, no way. Come on, babe, it's your lucky day. Shut your mouth, we're gonna do it my way. Come on, baby, don't be afraid. If it wasn't for day rape, I'd never get laid.
Takes it in the behind. Take it!